Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club. Had a bit of a stressful day, yeah. Day before holiday, isn't it?
Oh, well, you know, we normally talk on a Monday night, don't we? Tonight it is Thursday, and that's because of your insistence on going on holiday.
Yeah. Taking a whole long weekend off.
Yeah.
I know.
Where are you going?
Well, I'm going to Porto in Portugal.
Oh my god.
I'm going with my friend Sophie. Not BFN Sophie.
Different Sophie.
A different Sophie who works in hospitality and so has hooked us up with some like wine tasting experiences. So I'm quite excited. Basically it's my treat because Mr. Gabby went to LA for over a week to a wedding in June, and so I've been nowhere all summer, and so I was like, well, I'm taking mine.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough, but it upsets me that you won't be around, and yeah. It upsets me that you're gonna be having a lovely time, that I'm gonna have to unfollow you on Instagram so that I don't see all your smug photos.
Well, I think it's your duty to look at my smug photos, mate.
I'm just going to do the crying emoji at them all.
Oh, yeah. Go on then. Yeah. How are you?
I'm okay. It's been... Do you know what? Can I tell you about a book I read this week?
Please do.
Right. So I've just, for work, read this book called Bully Market, which is by a woman called Jamie Fiore Higgins. She's an American. She worked at Goldman Sachs. Basically, the book is about her time working at Goldman Sachs. It's quite enraging. And, you know, last week we were talking a lot about high-powered jobs, infertility in the city.
Yeah.
She, like, you know, when you're just going through something, you're just reading something or you're watching TV and suddenly an infertility storyline smacks you in the face. And you're like, what? So she just kind of halfway through casually talks about the IVF that she went through while she was at Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
But also, and I don't think this is a massive spoiler, there's a miscarriage scene in the book, which is something that she experienced, which is one of the most detailed. And I when I was talking to her, I used the word graphic, but I don't mean in a like appalling way, just in a like it's an incredibly detailed description of going through a miscarriage, a 12-week miscarriage, so, you know, late. And I just lost it. Like, I was in tears, but I just think it is the most incredibly brave piece of writing I've read for ages.
Interesting.
It's really good. Like, you know, if you're gonna be triggered by something like that, don't read that book. But if you're not, like, or if you're at all interested, I mean, I'm fascinated by what goes on behind closed doors at Goldman Sachs, so I loved it. But if you are like at all interested in that kind of thing, I really would recommend it. It's a really good book. It's called Bully Market.
Okay. Is it just out?
Yeah.
New release?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know whether it's out yet. It might be coming out soon. But okay. Just check, have a look on wherever you get your books while you're buying our book.
Of course.
Yes. And yeah, I thought it was extraordinary, like really extraordinary description of a miscarriage that you just, you know, if you're reading like a memoir of a pregnancy loss, you probably would expect to encounter that. But this is a book about working at a Wall Street firm, like, and I just, yeah, it kind of knocked me for six. So there you go. That's my recommendation of the week.
Great. Thanks for that, Emma. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's really nice because I had a chat with her.
Oh, there we go. BFFs.
BFFs. So I think you should talk about what we are doing today, Gav, because it's your brainchild.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we've got a bit of a special today, which is all about what to do with embryos. I think the thing about this episode is probably going to be that if you don't have embryos and you're not in that position, this might feel a bit annoying because you're like, well, you guys are privileged enough to have embryos. But a lot of people who have gone through the IVF process do have leftover embryos, and it's kind of something that a lot of us in this community have to deal with that you wouldn't normally have to deal with.
No. Yeah, it's really interesting. So we spoke to a couple of people about it, didn't we?
Did, yeah. With the absolutely brilliant Natalie Silverman of the Fertility Poddy.
Yep.
Also, we speak to an embryologist called Millie Kanani.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting discussion. Like, the interesting thing about Natalie that I don't think I quite realised was that she had her son and then she just decided that was enough, no more.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did some really interesting posts on Instagram, and I think she did a podcast episode as well about the kind of decision-making process about, you know, what to do with her embryos.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's really fascinating.
Well, it's something that I think you just said that she just made the decision. She didn't just make the decision. It was kind of like, it was a very difficult thing to come to.
It's a process.
It's a process, all a process. And it's one of those things that we always kind of joke about, like, oh, I'll be paying for my embryos to be stored for the rest of my life. And it's kind of true because having to deal with that and make that final decision is very fucking difficult. And it's kind of a position that, it's obviously quite timely for me because it's kind of the position I'm in at the moment. And potentially you as well at some point, you know what I mean? Like, it's coming up quite soon for both of us, or is it? You know what I mean? It's kind of like, do we deal with it now or do we just keep paying and forget about it? It's just so hard.
It's not an insignificant sum, is it?
No.
No, 300 quid a year it costs me at the moment.
Yeah, mine's similar. Which it would be nice to have, but also I'd pay that just to not have to make this decision. So that's the situation we're in. So I thought it'd be good to just speak to Natalie, get her experience, which is she's so honest and raw about it. It's really kind of good to hear her talk about it. And then Millie, who's an embryologist, to talk about the other side of things and what it's like for her, kind of, and how she supports patients and what actually happens as well, just a bit of the kind of nitty-gritty of what goes on. And Emma, we've also got, obviously, Professor Tim.
Yes, we have. And he's talking about how common it is to bleed heavily during the 2-week wait, and this is something,
Jesus.
This is a subject close to my heart.
Indeed it is.
So we'll have that.
Excellent.
And don't forget, at the end of the podcast we're going to be talking about
me.
And if you don't want to listen to that, I will make sure I put the time code in the show notes, but just turn off after Professor Tim.
Yes. And in case you haven't been following, that's Emma is going to be talking about her early pregnancy.
But before that, if you want to get in touch with us, you can Instagram us.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can Twitter us.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
You can purchase our book.
at any bookstore.
And we would love it if you would rate and review the podcast.
On Apple Podcasts. Look at, I'm giving all the people the information now. You can also buy a Just Relax t-shirt. There you go, guys. Head to the link in our bio and buy a Just Relax t-shirt. You won't regret it.
I think you have my one of those, by the way.
I think I do, actually, yeah. Sorry. I keep seeing it in my drawer and going, oh, give that back to Emma.
Okay, so let's kick off with our conversation with Natalie.
Let's. Natalie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Finally. So we're here to talk about embryos and what to do with them. So I guess the first question is, when did you first start thinking about what you were going to do with your embryos? When did that kind of hit you?
I think so you have your period of time that the storage is included. So that's what, the first year. Mm-hmm. And then the second year, then you get the first payment. And then I think we had the second payment. So my son is 7. So by the time he was 3 or 4, so I moved from London to Manchester when Phoenix was 2 turning 3. So between 3 and 5, I suppose, we'd move to a new area, and you're dealing with getting used to being in a new area. And so just the thoughts, your headspace isn't in my headspace. Our headspace wasn't in what we're going to do about family building, but there was just so much going on that it wasn't like, in all honesty, I think the experience that we had having Phoenix, whilst my story is that we were successful first time with treatment. So whilst that treatment experience wasn't lengthy, I think the mental health impact was pretty significant. Our reason for needing treatment was, it was with my other half, and he really struggled. And I think the conversation about a second was just, it wasn't really there. It wasn't prominent. From the, like, I remember seeing on social, people that had been through treatment were like, and we're talking about having another quite quickly. And that didn't really happen to me. And I didn't really feel it was something that I was going to push because of just what was going on mental health wise. And so it was more the storage letters came, we paid, we just didn't talk about it. And then I think after 2 or 3 years of paying storage, we'd paid 3 extra years. I was like, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about if and what. And basically, I was like, I obviously was in this space talking about this. So it was very prominent, more so to me than my husband.
Of course.
And I was like, we need to make a decision. And to be really frank, we hadn't bought a house. It was a financial conversation of, look, we're in this position where we still haven't bought a house. My husband had changed careers. So he'd gone from being in one career to basically being an apprentice in a new career. So financially, we weren't in a strong position. And I started to look into how the hell I was going to get my head around it, because it seemed from his point of view, it wasn't something that he was keen to pursue further treatment. And I then basically was like, I need to talk to someone about this. So it's a bit of a convoluted story, but I spent 18 months talking about it in, like, with having therapy about it. I started, because I'm Jewish, I started, and I'm not massively practicing, but it's a part of my identity. And I was like, I wonder if there's something from the religious point of view that I could do in terms of a kind of blessing if I'm going to do something with these embryos, if I'm not going to use them. And it was a really quite interesting little exercise. I reached out to, there's a Jewish charity supporting people with infertility called Hannah. And I had this conversation with this amazing lady, and she was like, I'm going to go and speak to a rabbi and see if there's a blessing, basically.
Wow.
I just thought if there was something that I could do as a goodbye, but there wasn't. There is a something that is kind of around loss that could have been done. But we then got to this conversation of them saying there should be some conversation about implications counselling from your clinic. Because basically with your clinic, obviously you get offered counselling when you're going through treatment, but if you are then looking and you've got frozen embryos and you're looking to have this kind of conversation, they should offer it. So I then went back to my clinic, and I was eligible. So I was eligible for sessions with a therapist there about what it meant. And basically she said, I need to talk to you both. And at first my other half was like, I don't know if I want to have the conversation. So I had the first couple of sessions with her. I remember, God, the first session, as it happened, I was actually at the BBC in like, why I thought I could, I was at like a workshop and I was in like a open plan office, like an open plan building, like sat in this like weird pod thing, thinking right. I could have this conversation. And I basically was in tears. I was totally naive. And I think the biggest thing I can say with this conversation is you can't rush it. I'd been talking already at this point. When I got to the implications counselling, I've been talking about it for about a year with this other therapist on and off. And then I had this very specific first session, like I say, in a stupid open plan situation. And I just remember I was, and it was like a face, you know, like a Zoom thing. I was like bawling, not realising just how, and even talking to you about it now, like it makes me think just that vulnerability that it makes you, like I was just saying before about the weight of the decision.
Yeah.
Because I think I was very instantly apparent that I was making this kind of, I was pushing to make this end point decision. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a very long answer to you asking me, but I'd say about 18 months from starting to that and reaching the final decision.
You know, we were going to ask about whether you'd had your kind of options explained to you. And I guess that's kind of part of that.
So yes, so what the options are is that you can either continue paying for storage.
Yeah.
You can donate to science. Mm-hmm. You can donate to another couple, but I was 36 at the age of, at the point of having treatment, and it's only if you're 35 or under that you can donate to another couple.
Right.
Or you can, as the therapist talked about, which is one of the nicest ways that I think to talk about, is allow them to be let go, because I think the language around this,
that's a lovely way of putting it.
Yeah, I think it's a really tricky one to talk about, the language. And I've spoken with embryologists about the like language that's on the paperwork, which is like dispose or perish, and it's really triggering, I think. Or she also said to me, you know, you could have them put in back it, you could, you don't have to have a medicated cycle, you could have a natural cycle, or you can have a, you can have them put in at the time where they're not going to take.
But presumably that's quite expensive.
I never really looked into the, I mean, there is a cost, I never looked into exactly how much, but I didn't want to, like, I suppose, risk, because I knew that in all honesty it wasn't something I felt, having, when I went into treatment, I didn't know what you guys know and what I now know. I went into treatment 7 years ago, very naive. Yeah. I had a best friend that had been through it. After three rounds, she was successful. I didn't look at any of the forums, what have you. And I was fortunate. I was successful first time. 7 years, no, it was 5 years on, hearing all the stories and all the lack of success, I couldn't put myself, mentally, I just couldn't put myself through it. And and with the whole mental health side, with my other half, it just felt like it wasn't the right thing to do. And the therapist had said to me, you've got to make sure that there's not going to be any regret, you've got to make sure that between the two of you it's not going to come back and bite you. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you've got to talk about.
Yeah. What do you talk about? Because that's the thing that would blow my mind, is just the making sure there's not any regret. Like, how do you do that?
Well, somebody said to me, unless you're 100% sure, then don't let them go. But I wasn't 100. I have to be honest, I wasn't 100%, because, and even to this day, because my son talks about siblings.
Oh God!
You know, there's times where he asks, and you know, it does sit there, and I still see pregnant tummies, and I see pregnancy announcements, and I still, you know, I don't believe that you could ever be 100%, but I think it was the right thing for us.
Why did you because as we were kind of joking earlier, like we're going to be paying until we're in our 80s. Yeah. What made you think, okay, I actually kind of need an endpoint here? Like, was it just closure, or, you know, were you just thinking I've got to make a decision at some point?
I think it was closure. I think it felt like it was hanging over me, and I wanted to almost push the outcome to see because I was getting older. I mean, I think so. I was 42 at the point that we 43, and I was like, and I had my own business, and I was just like, how am I going to manage this if I am going to be a mum again? Like, so, like I say, it was a real head over heart. And I hated that in some respects, that it was like a fucking mature decision that had to be made, rather than I just want to see what happens. It wasn't that. It was, I've got to be a grown up here and actually look at what my marriage is, what our life is, what we can give our son, and just be a grown up. And I think that was, but do you know what I think it gave me was the impetus to just understand then what can we do with then the embryos, and what does that mean? And I think, like, the move that we made, which is, and I'll explain, which was to donate to science, ultimately was like something that I'm really proud of. And I think that's the, like, silver lining, you know, of what was a real, I'd say it's the most difficult decision I've made in my life, to be honest.
God, don't.
Sorry.
like, on the emotional side of things, do you think that it's emotional because you're not sure if you're making the right decision, or is it emotional because you have a connection with the embryos that makes it emotional? I can't, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think you've got a deep emotional and psychological attachment to that embryo because it's a potential child. And I had three embryos from the same batch as Phoenix, and I've seen what that embryo developed into, like this brilliant little boy, and I could have another little boy or girl like him. Like, it's not like it was a later round of treatment, it was from, and it would have been, you know, like his twin ultimately, and I that just messed up with my head so much in what I could have had. That's what I had to really work on, because I was also denying him a sibling, and I'm one of three, my husband's one of three, we always thought we'd have more. Sorry, there's a massive guilt attached.
And how do you deal with that? How have you dealt with that?
I think talking about how family isn't necessarily just your, you know, people that live in your house, being very open to my son having sleepovers, and being that being that mom who's like, yes, your kid can come round, and being that savior to friends with siblings who are like desperate to get rid of their children. I'm like, yes, because of the mom guilt, and probably massively overcompensating with the effort I put into being a parent. I'm not saying that people that have more than one child don't put in the effort, but I think I do push myself to do all I can and to be present as much.
I know what you mean, because I think often when you're kind of making this decision, one of the things that you're saying, if you're like, I'm going to have an only child, you're like, but that means I'll be able to give them so much more than I would if I had another one. And so that's, you're kind of like, you kind of have to do that now. I have to follow through.
And I talk to friends that have got one child. I'm a bit funny as well about saying only child. I kind of like, I feel like, I don't know, I think maybe I'm just a bit precious about the language around it. But I've talked to friends who have one child and how they feel, and talked to them about when the kids have asked about siblings and how they've had those conversations. And I've talked to adults who are only children who have talked about how amazing their lives have been. And I've talked to adults who have talked about how they were lonely and wished they had siblings. I've talked to siblings who hated their siblings. So I think I just, having that open door kind of feel about your house, I think is something that I've made a point of. And just trying to manage the guilt and be kind to yourself, because I think the guilt is something that keeps cropping up with it.
Yeah. Shall I tell you about a conversation I had with a person that I interviewed? So she's got one daughter that she had after a huge amount of IVF. she said 12 rounds.
My goodness.
She said something like, you know, she's 18 now and we are so close and she's just had me all the way through her life.
Yeah.
And isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And I was like,
that's really special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen that with, you know, my friends that have got one kid, like the relationships are really special. And I've seen in the same way friends that have got several and feel that they can't put the time in and they feel exhausted. And, you know, it's a hard job being a parent and running your own business and having a child. Like, I feel like my business is another child. And I think maybe if I was employed, it would have been a different conversation as well. But there wasn't that, like, things weren't set up in my way, in my world that way. So you've got to do what's right for you. And I think I can take the time to do what I want to do with my son because I'm also my own boss. So there's all these kind of pros and cons, I think, of the situation.
I mean, in your kind of discussions with other people who've gone through this, have you ever had a conversation about faith and disposing with embryos? Like, because I think there probably is a faith link for some people. Do you find that people, or have you had conversations with people who've kind of been religious and therefore not been able to get rid of their embryos?
I haven't in depth. I mean, I know I've had some comments about when I've shared my experience, I've had some comments suggesting that it's the wrong thing to do because of people's personal beliefs.
Right, that's nice.
Yeah. And I think that is a whole other kind of conversation itself, isn't it? When we talk about a person's choice. Mm-hmm. In terms of people's beliefs, do you mean, of what they think that they should do?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of, I know in the US there's a massive embryo bank run by like a Christian organization that is kind of for embryos that, you know, that are not used, to pass on to couples that want to have children and can't.
I mean, I think amazing for people who are happy to do that. And I couldn't get my head around the idea of my, you know, my DNA and our embryo and our child being in existence.
Mm. So yeah, that freaks me out.
I couldn't get my head around it. But yeah. I think that's amazing. I mean, the other thing that I've learned from having the conversations about the donating to science is, because I've spoken to embryologists in some depth about this, and I think hearing an embryologist say what a precious gift it is, for you to give them that material that is so hard for them to get hold of, that ultimately means, because implantation failure is one of the biggest reasons that we know that IVF doesn't work.
Yeah.
And what the research, and if you think of what Steptoe and Edwards were able to achieve, that was from having access to embryos to be able to test to make IVF happen. And I think if you're struggling to get your head around this, that piece of like insight that this is considered the most incredible thing you could do for this science that we're in is what ultimately, like I was saying before, made me feel proud. And I do some work with an embryologist, and he says that it's given him such an amazing ability to do the research and things like PGT. They wouldn't have been able to introduce that at certain places around the world if they didn't have embryos to study, and the research that continues to improve IVF success rates is made possible from people that consent to donate their embryos. And I think that that's a really like special thing for you to hold on to.
It's kind of like donating to another couple, isn't it? But in a different way. It's like a different form of it. I'm interested to know, and this might be personal, but what was that moment like where that decision was taken? And, you know, was that simply you sending an email saying, right, this is our decision? Or were you in the clinic? Or what was the kind of moment?
So it was lengthy because the storage letter came. and we were having counselling, and then another storage letter came because we hadn't paid, and then a bailiff letter came.
Oh my God.
Like, and I remember going back to the clinic going, and this is like where the whole process of the system, you know, the reality of that this is a financial transaction, that there is a system in place for when money is owed to something, you know, and you're just like,
oh God.
So the reality of that was quite insensitive. And I remember being like, somebody needs to update my notes and stop sending me these bloody letters. Because I've had conversations with people that were like, yeah, I'm just not paying the storage. You know, I'm just hiding. I don't know how that happens that they've not had bailiff letters, but I'd had people that had said, you know, I wasn't paying the storage. And ultimately, if we do decide, then we'll just have a massive bill at the point of treatment. Because when I've talked about it, people have said that they've literally put heads in the sand. They just can't deal with it.
Yeah.
So we had that period of difficult conversations with the clinic where I was like writing quite arsey emails to say, what the fuck? You know, like, I don't expect to have that kind of correspondence. And then there's a lot of consent forms that you have to fill in, which we didn't expect to, I mean, you know, quite rightly, but there's a lot of paperwork about what's going to happen, what the process means. Are you sure? Are you both sure? Are you really sure? And then there's like another. So if you imagine the consent forms when you start your treatment, you know, it's kind of that overwhelm of consent forms. And then it's like explaining how long they can keep the embryos for once they are doing the research, and that it's this program, and that, you know, the embryo might just be thawed and it might not be used. It might like, and then you start to think, oh God, am I going to like, is someone going to thaw my embryo and like drop it on the, you know, it's not actually going to get used because someone doesn't do it properly. And I think you can't let yourself go down that level of, but we got the paperwork, we signed the paperwork. I then held on to it for God knows, like another month. Then I think we posted it, and I wanted to mark it. And we went to the coast, and we threw some roses into the sea and had a little, because I think I'd also kind of learned from what I'd seen in like the miscarriage community of marking loss. And I wanted to, you know, it's a different kind of loss. And, you know, I've learned from talking in this space, as you guys will, of giving yourself the time to grieve is a huge part of this like healing process. And that's what the therapist had spoken to me about as well. You know, you've got to do it at your own pace and acknowledge it how you want and mark it if you want. And we went and we threw these roses into the sea. I don't know what I was expecting, because of course they washed back. They came back into, you know, I like in my head they were going to float away. And we walked away from the coast, walked back kind of in, along the beach. And I saw this like lady stop and take some pictures. And I was like, oh, that's quite nice that that's made a nice probably Instagram post for someone else. You know, I've kind of passed on a little moment to somebody else in the kind of passing on my embryos. So it was a nice little...
God,
but yeah,
that took my breath away just then. I was crying.
It's funny, like it makes me, I'm talking to you with like kind of goosebumps, like I've talked about this, but it's still it doesn't leave you this. No. I think you've got to just accept that it's a part of all of this, is how it keeps kind of popping up to shake you up a bit.
It's the burden of IVF, isn't it? Because you know, you've got these embryos are kind of like specters that are always there in your head when before you've made that decision. They're always there. I've got three. And you have to go through this decision, which no one should have to do, I don't think. It's really hard. Anyway, Natalie, you've kind of talked a little bit about some really good advice there, to be honest, but would you have any kind of advice that you'd give other couples that you haven't maybe mentioned?
I don't think you can be influenced by anybody else. I think this is such a personal decision, and what's right for someone else might not be right for you. And I think with any, you know, looking at socials of people talking about this, like if you want to sit in limbo and keep paying that storage, you know, like you joked about, then do it. It's got to just be what's right for you, and you can't rush it.
Okay.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. I know it's an emotional thing for everyone, apparently.
Yeah.
It's not, tears away.
It's not a cheery, but you know, just knowing the amazing, if you do go down that donating to science, and there is such a shortage, I think, you know, embryologists will say they never have enough access. If that can help you feel a bit better in the, you know, doing something for the greater good, then I definitely felt really proud of us. And I feel proud to this day that that tiny little impact helped in some way, even though it was, like I say, a really tricky thing to do.
Nice. Okay. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much.
That was, I mean, that gave me a lot to think about.
Oh man, really made me choke up.
You got very emotional, didn't you?
Yeah, you can hear one of my intakes of breath is like, yeah, it got me. It's just, you know, it's one of those things, man. It's it kind of, the thing about it is, I think it's not the thing that you expect to get you emotional, or, you know, I wasn't approaching this situation expecting to be so distraught.
Do you feel like it's kind of affected your thinking, that conversation?
It has, in the sense that I am not in a rush to make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the pieces of advice, isn't it? And I think I'm just going to take a rest on that for a bit.
Fair enough. I think for me, it's definitely made me more comfortable with the idea of donating to science.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That is such a big plus point from that conversation, definitely.
Yeah.
Also, like, truth be told, I haven't properly decided yet. I just, that's the side of the fence I'm on, but I'm not off the fence yet. So, anyway. But yes, of course, we also spoke to Millie, who is a brilliant embryologist at the Evewell Clinic. And I think it's just really good for us, I think, to hear that side of the story too.
Okay, well, let's listen to what she's got to say. And then after that, we'll have Professor Tim.
Prof T. So yeah, we are doing a bonus episode about disposal of embryos. I'm just interested to know, is that part of your job?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that majority of embryo disposal was all through the lab and via embryologists. So absolutely. And when you work in a small clinic, it's normally that everyone pitches in. So everyone does a little bit of everything. And then when you work in a really large clinic, it's normally that each embryologist has a slightly different duty. So you might be part of the consent, discard, renewal, invoicing team. So absolutely. And as part of training to become an embryologist in the UK, you have to do learning and competency and understanding about what this process is from a legal perspective and from a process perspective, and then also about like supporting patients through that as well. So yeah, very much part of most embryologists' life.
That's really interesting. So they talk to you about the kind of emotional side of things as well as the kind of more practical side.
Yeah. So training as an embryologist in the UK is through majority through a scheme called the STP, which is Scientific Training Program. And as that's been developed over the last 10 years, a really big part of it is making sure that embryologists are taught the empathy and understanding side of it, so that when you give bad news or you have to have these really complex conversations about discarding embryos, that you know how to do that. So absolutely, yeah, really important.
And what kinds of embryo disposal are you involved in? Is it kind of, is there just one kind, or are there multiple ones that you
know? So, well, I mean, on the grand scheme of things, yes. So, but ultimately people elect to dispose of different types of embryos and for different reasons. So unscreened embryos are embryos that, you know, are, you know, patients elect to dispose of, but then you also have embryos that have had genetic testing. So embryos that have had PGTA, which is essentially PGS, and is a test for aneuploidy, and then also PGTM or PGTSR embryos, so embryos which are purposefully being screened to avoid the inheritance of genetic disease. So I think each category almost comes with a different set of emotions with it. If you think of PGD, which is couples coming through because they know that they're trying to avoid the inheritance of a disease within their family in any of their children, they might have an affected child. So these embryos for them, it's a totally, I think, different set of emotions than it is for perhaps an unscreened embryo. And I think you need to remember with PGD embryos as well, there's a lot of ethics involved in this, because if you're screening out like BRCA1 or BRCA2, people have very healthy lives as someone who has BRCA1 or BRCA2, and you're electing not to use those embryos, and as a couple electing to dispose of those embryos as well. So that, I think, is a whole other set of challenges as well in terms of discarding embryos. Same with embryos that are screened and screened as abnormal. So if they've had PGTA, there's a lot of debate at the moment about PGTA, about abnormal embryos, normal embryos, and mosaic embryos as well. So that's a whole other set of kind of discussions. And then I think there's also a whole conversation that I think people sometimes think that, oh, if you've had a baby, then maybe it's easier to part with your embryos, that you've got what you wanted from this experience. And I think it's really naive to assume that about people. My best friend had IVF, and parting with her embryos after she had her little girl was so hard, because that cohort of embryos are, in her brain, in part a sibling or potential sibling to her daughter. So yeah, it's really challenging. It's really, really hard. And again, I think even parting with embryos that have been screened, that are screened as abnormal, is really hard as well, because even though science tells us that those embryos aren't going to give us the outcome we want, for some people, I think there is a tiny, tiny, tiny thought that maybe they can. And that's another element of thought and difficulty. So yeah, really challenging.
Yeah, it is. And so what do you know what options people are given? So if someone comes into the clinic and says, I've got however many frozen embryos on ice, are they given a suite of options from the clinic?
So that will depend on what clinic, ultimately, and what the clinic's policies, internal policies are. Majority of clinics are truthfully going to give you a small set of options, which will be discard, donate to training, donate to research if they have associated research. Not all clinics do, and not all clinics have that in-house, but some clinics will have relationships with universities or research groups that they can ship embryos to. Very, very, very rarely do I see embryo donation. And the reason for that is that embryo donation is incredibly complex in the UK, because effectively, both the male gamete provider and the female gamete provider have to become, in the eyes of the law, donors. And so it's really involved to try and donate embryos. It is legally possible. It is legally possible, but you have to do all of the screening and consenting and counselling to become a donor. So that's hard. But that's what most clinics offer. So I would say discard, consent to training, and consent to research. Consent to training is often an option that patients go for. And I think it's important for them to feel like science has benefited them. And so in a way, they are benefiting science by allowing members of, you know, my team and other embryologists to use those embryos. And it is really valuable for us. It is so valuable for us in terms of training. So they're the main options. Have you come across any other options?
I once heard someone talking about something that she referred to as compassionate disposal. So
yeah,
transferring it, or is that what it's called?
Compassionate transfer.
Compassionate transfer, yeah, I thought that might be it. So yeah, transferring it at a time when there's no chance it would take.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So again, thawing an embryo and putting it back on a day in the cycle when the uterus isn't receptive to receiving that embryo or hasn't had any luteal support, etc. I truthfully don't know many clinics that do that or go for it. In one part, I think it could probably be viewed as a bit of a shame. On the other part, I understand from perhaps a medical legal perspective that clinics maybe wouldn't want to offer that, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Clinics should only be doing procedures that are of benefit. And so I can kind of understand the logic where some clinics would say, do you know what, we just don't want to do transfers and put women through this unless it's going for a productive outcome. And then I think when it comes down to the kind of like disposal moment, shall I say, mm-hmm. some clinics also will support patients with that, in that I know embryologists who have, you know, allowed patients to be there in that moment when embryos are removed from liquid nitrogen, or have handed over the straw devices that we freeze embryos on to patients after, you know, removing them from liquid nitrogen. So I know that there are some clinics as well that perhaps are able, because of workload, etc., and ethos, to support patients who really struggle with the thought of letting go.
And how often do you talk directly to patients about this? So I imagine a lot of your work is in the lab. How much of it is talking to people?
Oh, all my day is talking to people. So I work at the Evewell. So we are very, very much talking to patients. Every patient has an embryology consultation. I think we're not the norm. Embryologists speak to patients majority of the time, egg collection, fertilization, embryo development, etc. But this discard process and the management largely of this really is dealt by the embryology team.
Do you ever have any kind of words of advice for people, or kind of kind words in this moment if they're feeling a bit weird about things?
I mean, having spoken to many couples, everyone kind of meets this differently, and I think that's okay. Whatever feelings you have around this is allowed. You've gone through so much to get to this point, you've worked so hard to get here. It would be weird if it wasn't really hard, you know, for the journey that this has been. If it wasn't difficult, that would kind of be strange. But we will always signpost to counselling, always. I think all clinics should offer patients time and, you know, support, whether that's with nursing discussion or if they need to see a clinician to speak to someone, or if they just need, you know, half an hour on the phone to talk it through of what it means. But signposting to counselling services is really big. I just think, you know, yeah, it's just really tough. I don't even know. It's a really, really hard thing. It's really hard.
It is, but it sounds like you are aware of that, and that in itself means probably quite a lot to people, I imagine.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the flip side as well is we spend all our lives trying to create life and create families. That's why I do this job, right? I want to help people create a family in whatever way that looks like, in however that ends up being. That's why I do this. And so the flip side is for me is that I stand in these rooms with all this liquid nitrogen and all of these tanks, and I just think, my God, there is so much life in this room. It's a really strange job. And then being part of that discard process is also really tough at points, because you might have counseled a patient through that conversation, through that moment, getting consent forms, you know, really torn about what to do. Maybe they've extended their consent because they needed another year to think about what they wanted to do. And then you then follow their wishes, which is your job. And that is sometimes really strange. It's a weird thing to do as well when you work to create that. So yeah, it's a difficult thing. But yeah, that's why we're there.
Well, thank you from all of us for all of the work you do. Mm-hmm. It is greatly appreciated. And as I say, it's lovely to know how conscious you are of what a big deal this is.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F?
What the F? Oh, Professor Tim.
So we are talking about how common it is to bleed heavily during a 2-week wait.
Interesting.
I mean...
I did not bleed at all during mine.
I had a little smear of blood during my first 2 weeks. Not during my first 2-week wait, during my second 2-week wait. But with both the successful rounds that I've done, I had like super heavy bleeding like 1 day after the end of my 2-week wait.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
It's interesting. But to go back to pre-IVF world, used to regularly get little spittle spottle here and there. Is it implantation bleeding? I'll take everyone back to that little dilemma. So that used to happen to me regularly during that particular 2-week wait.
Yeah, and same actually. I used to get a lot of pre-menstrual spotting.
Mm-hmm.
The worst. Although this question is bleed heavily, so.
Yes, I suppose it's not quite the same. Yeah. But anyway, right. Well, what does Professor Tim have to say?
So during the 2-week wait, so that's the time from the egg collection and embryo transfer up to the pregnancy test, then there are quite a few hormone changes that are going on. In a fresh cycle, you'll be given some progesterone to help support your own progesterone levels coming from the corpus luteum. But the progesterone that's given in the form of vaginal pessaries or the subcutaneous injections, it's not enough to stop bleeding. It's there to support your own progesterone. So there can be some bleeding. In terms of the cause of it, it's possible that it can come from the cervix because of all the hormone changes that you've had. If you've had an egg collection, sometimes blood can have collected at the top of the vagina and can then come down in the few days afterwards. It's also possible there can be some bleeding from within the uterine cavity, perhaps at the lower part near the cervix. If the bleeding is very, very heavy, that is uncommon unless it's right up before the pregnancy test. So if the clinic has asked you to do your pregnancy test on a certain day and you start having heavy bleeding within a couple of days beforehand, then unfortunately that could be a sign that the cycle hasn't worked and it's a withdrawal bleed or a period. It's still important, though, to do your pregnancy test on the day you've been told to by the clinic, because I have seen patients who've had surprisingly heavy bleeding but have still been pregnant.
Right, hi, mate.
Hey, mate. Hey.
Hey.
How are you? How are you?
How am I? Well, got a couple of updates, I guess.
Go on, then.
I had actually planned to do two separate updates, but then we kind of got lazy and... now we're just doing it in one. So, early pregnancy has been fun. Mm-hmm. Way less anxious and like horrible than last time. Nobody told me it's been a non-viable pregnancy. That's exciting.
Good.
The cyst is on the wane.
Oh my God.
Thank but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Good Lord.
I know. I just want to talk about an experience that I had to do with drugs.
Okay.
So I'm on two drugs. At the moment to kind of sustain the pregnancy. Most people will probably know what they are, but I'm not going to name them. My clinic originally prescribed one drug to me. And then halfway through when we were topping up my stash,
mm-hmm.
They got a different one because they said there's a shortage. They can't get hold of the original one.
Okay.
Because they use a specific supplier. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Within... I would say 2 hours of me starting to use the second one. And I'm very deliberately not using names here because I don't want anybody who's been prescribed that drug to have a massive freak out.
Yeah.
This is going to happen to them because my body's stupid. But yeah, so I was within hours of this second new drug that's just a different form of the old one that I was prescribed. I just started bleeding like absolutely loads.
Jesus.
Obviously had a massive freak out. Mm-hmm. Booked one of those scan places because I was like, there's no point like me trying to go to A&E. It's not going to happen. I'm just going to book one of those scan places. Either I'm losing my pregnancy or I'm not. So, right. And they can tell me.
Uh-huh.
So booked one of those scan places, everything was fine. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So I was like, right. The only cause of this can be my stupid cervix. Which we, as we know, throws a tantrum.
We do. Often. Friable. That's what they call
yeah,
it, isn't it?
My friable cervix. Yeah. So I was like, well, the only thing that's changed is this drug. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just try and get hold of the other one. And the first thing I did was ring around the pharmacies in my area to find out if they had any, and I found a pharmacy that had enough. Of this drug of which there is a shortage, so it was quite hard to find it, but
yeah,
I made maybe 4 phone calls before I found what I needed, so it wasn't that hard. And then I phoned my GP, and the reason I did that was because I just needed somebody who would give me a prescription fast, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be taking this drug anymore, and I felt like my GP like is connected into the pharmacies in the area. She could email the prescription straight to the pharmacy. I wouldn't have any kind of shit having to like argue with them. So I phoned her and I just said, look, I'm really sorry to kind of disturb you, but I'm bleeding a lot and I can't get hold of my fertility doctor, which was a lie. Would it be possible to just prescribe me this stuff? And you know, it's an HRT drug, so it is prescribed fairly regularly by GPs.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, of course I'll do that. So she literally like wrote a prescription, emailed it to the pharmacy, and I was there within 20 minutes with the
Amazing.
Original drug.
Amazing.
And the whole thing, like 6 weeks supply, cost me £9
oh.
as opposed to £200 for the other one.
Oh my God.
Right?
How bizarre.
I know, it's mental. So I just wanted to kind of make the point that if you're prescribed something and you're not that comfortable with it, or you're used to something else, like there is an avenue to just go back to the old one. Like it's
yeah.
not that hard. Like okay. I you know, I don't live in central London. I'm not in a place with like ample supplies of weird drugs. Like I did manage to get hold of it, so yeah.
It's worth a try.
Yeah, I think it is. And if you can go around different places, and I think if you're doing stims, it might be slightly different because it's not like an HRT drug, so it's not like a commonly available drug.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
but this one was, you know. It was easy to get hold of. It wasn't hard at all. Mm. It's just that my particular clinic's particular supplier that they work with didn't have any available.
Right, okay. That's good. That's really interesting. Well done.
Thanks, mate. I just wanted to make that public service announcement.
What else has been happening?
Yeah. So I went for my 7-week scan.
Mm.
John didn't come because even though I had put it in the diary, he booked a job.
So oh, dear. Cool. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Got quite annoyed about that.
Yeah.
Had a fight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he didn't come. But like everything was fine.
Thank God.
I feel like it's funny because my last 7-week scan, I was, my clinic quite often runs late. And by the time I'd been waiting 15 minutes, I was literally pacing up and down the waiting room. Mm-hmm. I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I was, of course I had a bit of anxiety, like we always do, but I was not pacing.
Yeah.
And when I saw the heartbeat, it was, you know, I wasn't that rush of emotion. It was just relief.
Mm-hmm.
Which was good. And I guess it's maybe because I'd seen a heartbeat when I went for the scan, for the original scan, yeah. Because I was bleeding. So I kind of, you know, I knew something was there, but a lot can change in a week and one day.
Unfortunately, yeah, it's so true.
Mm. So yeah.
That's great news, mate. Well done. Congratulations.
The craziest thing is that it's 12 millimetres in size, this thing, this embryo. And you can already hear a heartbeat.
Wow.
She like listened to heartbeat. I almost don't believe that it was the baby's heartbeat, that it was my heartbeat.
Mm,
she just picked it up by mistake. Mm-hmm. How can that heartbeat be loud enough?
Bizarre.
It's bizarre. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, this is very good.
Yeah, it's all good. We're all good. So I think probably this will be the last time we talk about this, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think
I don't think there's a need to carry on.
No, unless something very exciting happens.
Yeah, or very horrible.
Mm.
But I think, you know, from now on it's fairly straightforward and you've heard it all before if you listen to the second series.
Yeah. Okay.
I love the way I just said it, straightforward.
oh dear God. Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, we all hope not to hear from you again, because that, I suppose, no news from here on is good news.
Absolutely. And how are you, mate?
I am good. I don't really have anything to add other than, like, just, yeah, my ongoing head fuck about whether or not to try and have another one or not just continues. But
Do you think, so what, you know, I mean, we're talking just after we've had that Natalie interview.
Mm.
One thing that kind of hit me a little bit was that it's, you know, she does the same as us. She talks to people about this stuff constantly.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And it did feel like one thing that had put her off trying again was the fact that, A, it had been very straightforward for her, you know, relatively straightforward, but B, like, she was so aware of all the things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
Do you think that might be part of this?
I don't think it is part of my, and that, you know, I'm being completely honest, I think my decision making is not really based on IVF. It's not,
okay.
It's kind of based on having another child or not having another child, and my kind of experience of being an only child myself, not having any support around me here. I don't have any grandparents around us.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe, you know, some of it sometimes touches on financial. I think, I don't know. It's not, it's kind of a hard one to untangle. But I just have come to the conclusion that perhaps it'd be best for all of us if this was this was it.
I think that, I mean, they're all good reasons.
Mm, yeah. But then sometimes my heart just goes, well, why are you making this decision based on logical reasons? Why are you not just following your heart? That's kind of like, oh, God, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it is the wrong decision. I don't know.
That's a huge headache.
Yeah, that's it. That's where I am.
Well, we'll keep talking.
We will. Of course we will.
That's it.
Guys, that is it. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
I enjoyed it.
I certainly did. Yeah. Oh, Found it a bit emotional in parts, but yes, I definitely enjoyed it.
It's just an interesting topic that we've never really thought about before.
Yeah, exactly. Next week, we've got a surprise guest again.
Another surprise guest. I don't know if anyone knows that that's code for. We don't know. Yeah, quite.
I was going to say, have people twigged onto the secret? So yeah, there we go. It's exciting for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we will see you all then.
See you then, guys.
Have a lovely week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.